is Corolla Digital.
Hi, folks. It's Larry. Larry Miller. That's right. And I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening. It means the world to us over here. And if you like the show, please tell a friend. That's right. Bring a friend over, and it will really help us grow. And it means a lot to everyone here. So please tell a friend. And, well, that means we'll be able to say for a long time, we'll see you here.
From Level 5 City in Glendale, it's This Week with Larry Miller. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who really hates huge hot peppers. Hi, folks, and welcome back to This Week with Larry Miller. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And you know something? I say that every week, but it's true every week. And Dr. Chris and Colonel Jeff know it. When I hear that song played by that band, it gives me a smile and takes me to a place that's a good place. And I'll tell you more about that presently. But they are so good, they get better every week. That's, of course, the Ed Delaney Orchestra and the Brandy Carnes Dancers with boy tenor Eric Matthew Hendel, who says, "Who do you got a you-know-what to be the boy tenor around here?" Good question, Eric. And I love, by the way, that a lot of you guys, when you send in your musical questions or notes or anything, please keep doing it, by the way. It's very meaningful to us here. And as you can see, it gets you on the air. But I love that almost everyone, like Eric Matthew Hendel, uses not only correct grammar, but that structure of who do you gotta, you know what. He wrote gotta, G-O-T-T-A, and the you know what was hyphenated, you hyphen, no hyphen, what, which just makes it better, makes it funnier, makes it good. So he wants to know, who do you got a you know what to be the boy tenor around here? Well, first of all, Eric, me. No, that's not true. Well, actually, yes, it is. But, you know, even as a kid or a young adult or someone in show business, I never knew what it meant to say, who do you have to, well, you know what, to get something around here? How do you do that in casting, in selling something? I don't know. I didn't even know at the time. I might have mentioned this to you at some point. I don't think so, though, that, excuse me, the first development deal I ever had for Imagine Entertainment, which was great, to make a TV show, and the first deal I had an office and an assistant outside, and it was pretty neat. And I used to say to my wife, I'd call her up on the phone, excuse me, and she had her own offices. She's a writer-producer. And I used to say to her, hey, you know what? If you get free for lunch one of these days, why don't you come over here and I'll chase you around my desk? And that, excuse me, that whole sound, that whole image, that whole attitude suddenly puzzled us both, because she said, that's a great question, she said, what do you do once you catch me that you couldn't have done before? I said, you know something, that's a great question. I don't know. I never knew in the movies of the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, in any kind of comedy context, I never knew what it meant when the middle-aged to older man, who was a little chubby in the suit, would, with his hands out, and a big smile on his face, it was like a lunatic. He would be chasing his secretary around the desk, and she looked great. She looked like somebody's assistant in Mad Men, and she looked great. And she would run with her hands out around the desk in the same way, whether it's clockwise or not. And he's chasing her, and he's kind of giggling, going. And then she's going, Now, I don't know how this starts, and I don't know how it ends. I don't know what any of this means. I don't know whether this was long time ago in the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages or the Renaissance. I just don't know anything about when men in some sort of executive position started chasing women who worked for them in some sort of what? I guess some sort of sexual way. And I still don't know what it means. I still have no idea what a casting couch meant. And I know, I found out, by the way, as a full adult and someone in show business who's, well, been in many movies and many TV shows, and I've never seen a casting couch. Keep your jokes to yourself. So that's just a larger context, Eric Matthew Hendel, to the whole concept of who do you got to know, or who do you got to you know what to be the boy tenor around here. It's a funny way to put it. He really wrote a funny line, but I don't even know what it means in the first place. I'll tell you what happened, by the way. The reason I put in boy tenor as one of the constructs here, I just love it. Once again, as a kid watching the Ted Mack Amateur Hour and all these things on TV, the phrase was always there, and featuring boy tenor so-and-so. Even as a kid, I never knew what that meant, a boy tenor. So he was, I guess, a boy who was a tenor, so he wasn't an adult, but he had a really high, nice voice, a pretty voice. I don't know, but it always struck me as cute. That's why I love that construction. That's why, for the show, I love saying, good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and the old line I think I remember from the radio shows, I think it was an old Walter Winchell line, I think, and you'd hear, Colonel Jeff is nodding there, and you'd hear the you know, of a Morse code sender, and he'd say, "Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America," and oh, good Lord, it just flew out of my head. No, I'll find it. Don't put it up there. That's all right. Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea. That's right, and I think that's a kind of a cool, witty thing to say. But I couldn't just, you know, take "Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America," and all the ships at sea. That's too cool to be funny. That's just fun. At any rate, though, so who do you got to you know what to be the boy tenor around here? I don't know. I only know that in our show here, Colonel Jeff shows me when I get here, not right away. We talk about women we used to like who worked down the hallway from us in the first jobs we had, but. You know, how do you get anything? How do you get appointed to something? Is it because someone thinks you're cute and wants to chase you around the desk? I swear I don't know. But boy, I'll tell you, I always loved the phrase boy tenor. I don't know what it means. I have no idea. I'm not being shy now. I have no idea whether it really means anything other than he's a boy tenor. A tenor who happens to be a boy. But in any case, to Eric Matthew Hendel, I think, and Colonel Jeff and Dr. Chris think, that it's a very witty question you sent in. So keep sending them, Eric. And all you folks out there, keep sending questions. We love them, and they're important. And as you know, that's how you get on the air here. So in any case, who do you got to know? Who do you got to, you know what, to be the boy tenor around here? I guess I'd say me, but I'm not sure what that would mean anyway. Once you know me and then say, okay, what do we do now? I would say, in all honesty, I don't know. And there's nothing I really want to do, especially if you're a boy tenor. Now, if you're a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model somewhere in the 70s, and when I was somewhere in the 70s, meaning my IQ, and you know what? That could be different. I don't know how, but it could be. And by Amazon. That's right, Amazon. That's correct, Amazon. We like Amazon because they like us. And as you know, what you do is you go on your laptop, on your computer, on any screen you have, you go to Amazon. You punch in Amazon, and it takes you right there, and you get everything you want, right? Wrong! You don't. You don't punch in anything. You stop doing that immediately. Don't punch in Amazon. What you do is you go to our website. Aha, that's right. And our website, as you know, is LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the Mountain, Tom Mix, which is something I love. I guess I've explained it somewhere, that shaving a haircut, two bits, Who's on the Mountain, Tom Mix. And Tom Mix was, well, God bless him, he's passed on many years now, but he was a big Western movie star in silent films. And when did that come up? Who's on the Mountain, Tom Mix? You got me. And maybe he was chasing his secretary around the desk. But you know what? You go to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com. And when you get there, we have a banner that says Amazon. And you punch our banner that says Amazon, and that will take you to Amazon. The exact same Amazon, and you can get anything in the world you want, anything in the world you can imagine, anything in the world that's in your head, and they will send it to you, and it's a wonderful experience. Plus, when you go from our website at LarryMillerPodcast.com, they send us part of the dough, and that's very, very important. Why? I don't know. Again, I just know that it is, and you know that it is. You're supposed to get a piece of the dough. What do we do with it? So far, nothing. It sits there, but Colonel Jeff and Dr. Chris are both nodding with their cans of Diet Coke, and they know we'll go get some fried chicken and cocktails again. So in any case, thank you, Amazon. We love you, and we're glad you love us. Which brings us, of course, to the joke of the week. That's right, the joke of the week, otherwise known as the joke of the week. And I love doing this as well. This is a Myron Cohn joke, and it's wonderful. He's one of the great joke tellers, great storytellers of, oh, Lord, in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And I met him when I was a baby comic, and I saw a show he was doing. I had worked the night before in Cleveland at a nice club there, the Cleveland Comedy Club. And I went to see him, and I drove out. There was a young woman who had a really nice car, and she drove me out. Never mind why. And she drove me out. We went to this theater, Circle in the Round, Circle in the Square, something like that. And it was great. Myron Cohn was in his bathrobe with the socks on in between shows. And he was so sweet and said, come on in, come on in. And he liked the young woman I was with, by the way. Never mind why. And it was really very sweet. We were both very touched by it. And Myron Cohn, one of the great joke tellers of all time, if you get a hold of anything he did, an album he did, spend the time, take the time, listen to his voice, and imagine a man that skilled at joke telling that even in the business he was in, which was garment sales, he would have the sample case and he would go to offices all around New York City and the East Coast, and he would shake hands, and they all knew him. It's before getting into the show business. And they all knew that as they sat down there, he would tell three or four jokes, which was usually used to lighten the mood, I guess, in a sales meeting. And it got to a point after a year and 2 and 3 years, people started to say to him, you know, you're really good at this. These jokes and the way you tell them are far better than it was just us telling a joke. You ought to get into show business. And you know what? He did. And he changed show business. So in any case, here's a joke from him. A Jewish grandmother is watching her grandchild playing on the beach when a huge wave comes and takes him out to sea. And he's swimming when another wave comes, when he's out to sea, and it's knocking him further out to sea. And she runs over to the lifeguard and says, wait, please, that's my only grandson. He's out there right now. I beg of you, get him back. Bring him back. And the lifeguard starts to say, well, I have to make sure. And she said, please, go now. Get him there and bring him back. And another wave comes. They're watching and washes him even further out to sea. And the lifeguard takes those cases they have and the torpedoes they have, and he wraps them around his chest, and he runs as a good lifeguard should. He runs at full speed out to the water and into the water. And then once he gets in about knee deep and thigh deep, then he dives forward into the water and starts really going at a tremendous stroke out there. For some reason, the storms come. As he's swimming out there, the skies darken, storms come, And he gets out there even further. He's heading to this little boy. And now the whole people, everyone on the beach is watching this heroism. And another wave comes, washes them all out to sea. He fights the waves, fights the storm, and then animals, sea animals. You know how whales get shipped up on the beach? And there are small whales and large whales and seaweed and sharks and things that he has to fight through. He's hitting everything on the nose. He gets way out there, gets to the boy, grabs the boy. He knows how to do this. He's a good lifeguard. And he wraps the boy's arms around his back and around his neck and says, "Hold on, young man." And he starts power swimming back to shore. And you know what? Without using any of the waves, the storm starts to lighten, and he gets back, and he gets to shore. He takes the boy in his arms. He carries him up onto the beach there, and he lays him down on a towel, and he starts to make sure, is he alive? Is he breathing well? Is he okay? And the grandmother is there, and she's weeping, and everyone is around them, and sure enough, the boy coughs, and some water comes out. He coughs again. Some more water comes out, and sure enough, he's okay. He's going to be fine. And the lifeguard, he's had a breath himself. So tired. And he waves the grandmother over, comes over, and he sits the boy up and puts the boy in the grandmother's arms. And so she can hug him and sit there and weeping as the boy comes back to himself, to his life, to the beach. And the lifeguard stands up, lets a breath out. Boy, he really worked hard there. And as he turns to walk away, the grandmother taps him on the leg and says, "He had a hat." That's a pretty good joke. I like that. After all that, he had a hat. And so that's pretty good. That's a joke. Oh, I heard somewhere in third grade, and maybe you did too, but boy, like all good jokes, they never go bad. And that's a Shaggy Dog story. You can make that up. I made up all that about, oh, the storm and the waves and how many animals come out, and you can do anything. You can put God into it too, and God sends a storm, but it's just wonderful. After all that, she still taps him on the leg and says, "He had a hat." So there we are, which of course leads us into the poetry corner. That's right, the poetry corner, the corner that has many things in it, but really the only thing is poetry. I love poetry, and you do too, even if you think you don't. You really do. Poetry as a concept and a theory and a form is a wonderful way to think about living life. It's a wonderful way to think of these great writers and poets who took their time to use great phraseology and great words and great colors and great attitudes to talk about life in a different way. And this one is a good one. It's by William Shakespeare. And William Shakespeare, well, the Bard of Avon, he's really, certainly to me, the greatest flag waving in the soil of English authors, and really any author, any playwright, any poet. William Shakespeare is still the greatest and the best. And he wrote this one about our attitudes, about our own lives, and how we look at life coming around the arc and going down towards its inevitable end, to death. And he wrote this. It's called Fear No More. Fear no more the heat o' the sun, nor the furious winter's rages. Thou thy worldly task hast done. Home art gone and taken thy wages. Golden lads and girls all must, as chimney sweepers, come to dust. Fear no more the frown of the great. Thou art past the tyrant's stroke. Care no more to clothe and eat. To thee the reed is as the oak. The scepter, learning, physic, must all follow this and come to dust. Fear no more the lightning flash, nor the all-dread thunderstone. Fear not slander, censure, rash. Thou hast finished joy and moan. All lovers young, all lovers must consign to thee and come to dust. No exorciser harm thee, nor no witchcraft charm thee. Ghost unlaid forbear thee, nothing ill come near thee. Quiet consummation have, and renowned be thy grave. Now, it's funny, Colonel Jeff and I were talking afterwards, and I said, and we both agreed, that it may not sound to you like a cheerful poem, but it is. What he's saying is, never mind them, never mind what you used to worry about so much, and even the highest-toned people, all the golden boys and girls, are just like a chimney sweep and go to dust, must come to dust. And so, you know what? I'm glad William Shakespeare wrote everything he wrote, and I'm glad he wrote that one called Fear No More. Which leads us, of course, to another magical moment for me in our weekly show, which is called the Magic Movie Moment. That's right, the Magic Movie Moment. This is the moment or the scene or the attitude or the look by an actor to another actor. And it's just something you like in movies you know. It could be a movie you saw for the first time, but it's usually something where you've seen the movie 5 and 10 and 15 times, and you really like one portion of it, and you just wait for it to come in the movie, and it makes you smile as it's there. It may have something to do with the plot. It may not. And I love thinking back on these things and adding to the list. Please send these in, by the way, to us as well, to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com, and please send them in, because if you have a magic movie moment that I don't know and that Colonel Jeff and Dr. Chris don't know, we'd love to see it from you, and I will tell everyone about it, just as you told me. So this is from, well, there were three of these movies I think made, maybe two, but They're wonderful movies. They're the James Coburn Flint movies. And I think maybe I've talked about it before in another sense, but they're very good movies. They're terrific movies, in fact, and they came at such a good time. This first one is called Our Man Flint, and that's his name in the movie, Flint, Derek Flint, and it came up at exactly the James Bond time. 1 or 2 years after James Bond and Sean Connery as James Bond hit the scene, and he knew everything, of course. That's one of the things we love about Sean Connery, and as I spoke of last week, he knew everything. But we loved that he knew everything. He wasn't a show-off about it. He was just that smart and that tough and that strong and that wonderful. Someone said, and I don't know who, why don't we make a guy, a secret agent, who's the best in the world. He's fabulous. And he knows everything. He knows twice as much as everything. He's just so good at everything he does. And he's got, never mind, one girlfriend. He has 5 girlfriends. They all live with him. And he has 10 girlfriends in another place. He has everything, this guy. And his name is Derek Flint. And in case you don't know James Coburn, my golly, he's so great. You know him from 1,000 movies. And so many things. For instance, The Great Escape, the World War II movie. He's so good in everything. And in these movies, he's just so much fun to watch. And in this movie as well, his boss, the guy who plays, well, the head of the CIA, I guess, at that time, or whatever the CIA is in these movies, is someone else who's great. The great Lee J. Cobb. And if you don't know him, oh, you know him. It's another thing as Colonel Jeff once said, if you saw a picture of Lee J. Cobb right now and you didn't know the name, you'd look at the picture and you'd say, oh, I know him. You'd say, oh, I know him. He's great. I've seen him in everything, and he's really wonderful in it. He's great in drama. He's great in comedy. And you know what? You'd be right. He's great in everything he did. He's passed on now. But, oh, Lord, he was so great in everything. Again, in drama and in comedy. And he was playing in Gentleman's Agreement. So many movies, I won't even start to think of them or list them. But in this movie, in the Flint movies, he plays the head of the CIA. And in Our Man Flint, he says to him, he goes to recruit Flint to get involved with whatever these stories are that I love so much. That's right, there's a guy on an island, and he's trying to change the weather. Whatever it means, it's wonderful stuff. And he says to Flint in his bachelor pad with the five different girlfriends all around doing things around the apartment. He gives him the idea. He says, we need you. The CIA needs you. The country needs you. The world needs you. And we need you to leave tonight. And Flint says, I can't leave tonight, sir. Tomorrow I have to be at a class for the Bolshoi Ballet in Moscow. And Lee J. Cobb, in a great look, just says, Flint, with all you do, with all you're good at, with all you know, how do you find the time to go take a class in ballet at the Bolshoi Ballet? And Coburn immediately says, oh, no, no, sir, to teach, sir, to teach. And I loved that moment because it's so right for the character. He's so good at everything. Never mind how you want to say, how do you find the time to do all this? You're writing books, you're going here, you're translating this to that. How do you find time to take a class at the Bolshoi Ballet? Oh, no, 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 sir, to teach. And that's a magic movie moment for me. And it's played so well by these two great actors, Lee J. Cobb and James Coburn. How well done. And in addition, I have, well, a contact in a way with both of them, even though they've both passed on, because I just did a movie with a great director. She directed for the first time. Her name is Julie Cobb, and that's right, her last name is Cobb, because she's Lee J. Cobb's daughter. And I just love her as a director, as a storyteller. In fact, I saw her over the weekend at Joanna Cassidy's house, who had a birthday party. It was Joanna's birthday, and I went over there just to take the time to say hi to Joanna again. We were married in the movie, and to see Julie was going to be there. And those are good hugs. I said to the two of them, we were sitting there at the potato chip bowl, and everyone else, it wasn't a huge party. There were another 10, 15 people around, and everyone else is walking around eating deviled eggs and chatting. But I said to them, you know what? Get-togethers like this are better for people like us, because once you've worked together, and we had, we just made this movie, oh, it was just 2 months before, and I said, once you've worked together, and once you've invested together, and once you've been successful together, once you've found the right space together, for people like us, for creative people, there's nothing better in life. And when we come to a party like this, it's best for us just to take 5 or 10 minutes and sit alone by the potato chip bowl and just smile at each other and remember what it was like to work together. So you know what? How do you like that? That Julie Cobb is Lee J. Cobb's daughter. It's a great Hollywood image to me of how things go on. No one in my family was in show business before I got in, but that's fine. That's great. And it just makes me thrilled to know that some people have, well, one or two or more generations of really deep involvement in show business with their families. And, well, Julie Cobb is a great writer, a great director, and a terrific performer. And she certainly has something. I'm glad she called me and hired me for this. And I didn't know until she did that she's Lee J. Cobb's daughter. So that's another reason the In Like Flint movies, especially Our Man Flint, came to mean so much to me. And I had a chance to work with the wonderful James Coburn, a guy who's been in so many great movies. And he was cast in the Nutty Professor movies as well. And I was the romantic center of those movies. Yes, it was the romantic center of the movies. By the way, I know it wasn't written that way, and maybe a lot of critics didn't think of it that way, but I'm telling you, he was the romantic center. But seriously, folks, I loved my part as the dean in those movies, and James Coburn was playing the giant, the worldly financier who was coming to potentially save the school and donate this and donate that. But, folks, I'm telling you, the chance to spend a couple of weeks with James Coburn on different locations and going to get a cup of coffee, strolling off to the craft services table, and just standing around the same way, like the potato chip bowl, just standing around chatting with a cup of coffee and talking about life and show business and family. It was wonderful. And Eddie Murphy felt the same way. He would say, wow, what's it like to hang out with Coburn? I can't believe he's here. We felt the same way. I'd say, I know. It's unbelievable. James Coburn is right there. We felt the same way. And so, oddly enough, the movies I had seen and loved so much as a kid and then an adult, Our Man Flint, and then the second one I think was In Like Flint. And you know what? It has a magic movie moment for me, and more than that, really. It has people in it who had a chance to give me, through their families, through their daughter, and through working together, well, a pretty good magic movie moment right there. So, thank you, James. Thank you, Lee. Well, thank you, Julie. James and Lee have passed on now, but Julie is going to tell a lot more stories, and I'm glad she is. And if you wonder, by the way, I really am not falling apart here, but I have a cold. I never get a cold. I'm one of those people who doesn't get colds. Whenever someone says, you know, a cold, it takes 2 weeks to go away or sometimes just 14 days. And they always have these almost witty little jokes about the cold. I've never told those or felt them or thought them because I don't get colds the way people get colds. Even with the kids going to school and going and every goofy birthday party I've been to, where everyone has a cold and they sneeze in a bowling alley and the whole alley actually keels over. And you know what, though? I never get colds. But I just ended a bunch of work. I ended Julie Cobb's movie, and then I had that movie up in Vancouver that I told you about, and I was very glad to do these. And then it all led in its way, and I had good stand-up jobs in Stockton and Bakersfield and Galveston. And there's still nothing better than being a good comic. And then that ended with, on last Friday, I was on Bill Maher's show. And it takes a while to prepare these things. I mean, more than a day, more than a week, more than a month, really. It takes a while to think what you're going to talk about. And especially because I wanted to talk about, well, walloping my head and having a brain injury and talking about what that was like. It's a good source of all sorts of material to write about. And that was Friday night. And I was thrilled. It went great. I was happy. They were happy. And then Saturday, you sleep in and you don't worry about anything else. If you don't have a family, of course. I didn't do any of that because I had to get up and do everything as usual. But then that's fine. That was Saturday night. I went over to Joanna Cassidy's for her birthday and saw her and Julie Cobb. And that was fine, too, to spend an hour that way. But then yesterday, the Sunday, I realized I was getting a cold, and I never get colds. And even one of my kids, and I know it's serious when one of the kids says something like this to me because they normally don't talk to me. They normally don't care what happens. Well, that's too harsh. They care a lot. No, they don't. Well, yes, they do. But when one of the kids says, hey, Dad, I think you're getting a cold. I think you have a cold. Sounds like a bad one. And you know what? He was right, though. That was yesterday. And around 4 or 5 in the afternoon, my wife said, well, what are we going to do for dinner for the kids and for us? Which is a silly question to ask because I have a cold. My head looks puffy and pink. I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, what do you want? And she said, why don't we order some Chinese food to be delivered? The kids love that. And you know what to get? And because I always order the Chinese food. And I said, well, I was just going to ask you to do the same thing. Why don't you call for the Chinese food? Now, we had 2 days of dishes and silverware and really clotted up napkins sitting in the sink and all around the kitchen. Sometimes we're pretty neat people, but sometimes, as you know, the kitchen gets away from you and it really looks, well, horrible. It looks like Tobacco Road. You look like this is before the Clampets moved out to Beverly Hills. And so, you know what? And she said it was really, really, well, bad. And she said, I'll tell you what, you call for the Chinese food, you deliver the Chinese food, you get it. And when it comes here, you pay and you set it up, you put the dishes out. And I'll tell you what, I promise I'll clean all the dishes in the sink. I'll clean the kitchen up. Now, that was a good deal to take for me because, number one, that's what I'm going to do anyway. I'm going to call for the Chinese food. I've never not called for the Chinese food. I've never not paid the delivery man. He knows me. If my wife paid him, he'd think some crooks were robbing the house. So I know what it's like. This is what I was going to do. And then I was going to take the food in, and then I was going to lay it out neatly with silverware. And I always ask them to send chopsticks. I'm the only one who uses them, but I always ask them to send it. And I was going to do that anyway, so I said, okay, all right, you've got a deal. And then you'll clean up all the dishes, and you'll clean up the whole kitchen, and we'll be starting out Monday on a great clean note. And she said, absolutely. And so I did everything I was supposed to do, and she, as you maybe can guess, did nothing. She did zero of any kind of cleansing. So coming through Sunday night, and we don't have the kind of relationship wherever I can ever say, hey, didn't you say you were going to do this? Well, I could say that, but she would. It would be very hard living together for about a day. In any case, nothing was clean. It got even dirtier. And, excuse me, I got up today. After only an hour or two of sleep that last night, I couldn't get to sleep. It was, well, my head was stuffed and I just couldn't get to sleep and get any good rest. And so I got up today, and my wife has a good friend who trains her. The friend is great. She's a wonderful, fit trainer, knows everything about athletics. And my wife was still in bed, though, because she was saving the energy from everything she didn't use to clean the kitchen. And she was still in bed. And so when her trainer got there, she said to me, why don't you go with so-and-so? You take a big walk down the hill. We're going to have to pay for it anyway. So in any case, I took a walk today with the trainer, and that was at 9 o'clock, after just an hour or two of sleep. And I was walking a little weakly. It was hard. And she said to me the same thing. She knows me. She said, you don't look that good. Are you feeling bad? And I said, yeah. She said, you have a summer cold, right? And I said, yeah, yeah. And so we walked down the hill, and we got halfway up the hill. And I said to her, you know what? Do me a favor. She already knew what I was going to say. She said, you want to wait here and have me go get my car and come by and come back down and pick you up? I said, yes, please. That would really change the end of this, so thank you. And I waited there. It just took just a little while, 5 or 10 minutes, for her to get up the hill on her own and come back down in her car. And that's what she did, and drove me up the hill. And I was pretty weak. I said, thank you, goodbye, be well, see you Wednesday. Another thing my wife would sleep through that I can do. But that I said, I'll see you then. And she drove off, and I slithered back into the house, and, well, no one was up yet, and just the dog. That wonderful thing with dogs, by the way, I've said this about this doggie that we love, and our doggie before that, whom we loved so much, and I'm sure you feel this about your dog. I look at them all the time and just think, still the only one around here knows what he's doing. And so he was there, and I could smile at him and pet the head. And then I went back upstairs, and the kids got up. This is about 10 or 10:30 now, and I was going to have some breakfast, but I was just feeling so off, so tired, so sick, and I didn't want to make that. And I said to the kids, you want breakfast? And they said, yeah. And so I did that. I'm a good breakfast maker, and I really wanted to lie down, but I washed everything, washed my hands, washed my face, really, you know, just I do things very neatly. And I made them breakfast, a great breakfast, as always. And my wife was starting to get out of bed, and she asked, would you make some coffee, put up a pot? And I did that, and I brought her a cup, and I had cracked some eggs for her and put out some toast and maybe half a bagel if she wanted it. And you know what, though, folks? I've never done this before, but I was really feeling out of it. I was really feeling tired. And I walked back into our bedroom with a cup of coffee that I had just made for her and gave it to her. And I said, you know what? Do me a favor. I gave the kids breakfast and everything's okay. And I gave the dog breakfast. And I opened some eggs for you and things. And I said, would you mind? I really feel like just laying myself down now. Now, what would you say at a time like that? Oh, are you okay? You don't feel so well? Now, this is the man you love. And what she did instead was just kind of swung her legs out of bed and muttered, I can't just lie here. I just have to get up and do this. You know, and that's not the thing you want to hear, but I didn't have the strength to answer her. So she kind of walked out or stormed out, and I just got into bed. I turned the TV off. She always turns it on. I turned it off. I turned the air conditioning off. She always turns it on. I turned it off. I closed the curtains, and she always opens them up. I closed them back. And the point is, I got back into bed, and sure enough, from 11 to 1:05, I went out cold because I hadn't even slept the night before. And that felt, it was a deep sleep. It wasn't even wasn't so much a nap sleep. I just took my sneakers off and, laid down on the bed and feet stretched out there and just went, boom, out cold. Now, you get up at 1:05. I'm supposed to be here at the show at 2. You get up at 1:05, which is what happened to me, and I realized I have just enough time to do the right thing, which is jump in the shower, get dressed, clean clothes, do everything right, head over to the show, and do a terrific I Have a Cold podcast. But you know what? As you can hear, I can barely hold it together, so I realized I hadn't had breakfast. It's 1:05 now, and I went for a glass of water and a glass of milk in the kitchen, and I said, you know what, I've got to do the podcast, and I haven't had anything, and I just opened the fridge, and there's the Chinese food from last night in two containers. Both containers my wife had ordered through me and not eaten. One was Kung Pao chicken, extra, extra, extra spicy. That's right, I said extra, extra, extra spicy. Three extras, because we decided, that is, she decided, that when I used to just order the Kung Pao chicken for her, it wasn't spicy enough. So she said, tell them to make it extra spicy. And so I used to order the Kung Pao chicken extra spicy. But then she decided that was still not spicy enough. She said, make it two extras, make it extra, extra spicy. So I started doing that. When I ordered it, I would order Kung Pao chicken extra, extra spicy, and it was still not spicy enough. So now we're on three extras. I ordered last night Kung Pao chicken extra, extra, extra spicy, and you know what? Maybe that's spicy enough, but she really didn't need any of it. So what happened was today, I opened a case of that with part of Sunday's paper still on the kitchen table, and I sat there. Do you know what extra, extra, extra spicy is like when you haven't slept and have a bad cold and are dead tired from having worked out and are just annoyed because everyone's annoyed at you? And you know what? And then you start eating because you're so hungry, you haven't had breakfast, and you have to do a podcast, which I love doing. And I took one bite of that extra, extra, extra spicy Kung Pao chicken. And you know what? Maybe you heard me, because I did. I took a bite of it, and it was like in a cartoon where your head turns into the 5 o'clock whistle and goes, woo! And folks, I was hungry, and I finished off the Kung Pao extra, extra, extra spicy chicken. But as I got up to wash out the container and toss it out, I realized the extra, extra, extra spicy stuff had made me sweat like I had gone through an interrogation in Lubyanka prison in Moscow in 1952. And as you may be able to imagine, those were not jolly days to go through an interrogation in Lubyanka prison. And by the way, I ate the peppers in there. I was so hungry, I didn't even know what I was doing. You know, these peppers, never mind what they call them in the cooking shows, like, oh, the elephant pepper. Oh, this is the ghost pepper. Oh, this is the killer pepper. You know, these different categories they have. These were whole peppers, not immense, but they're about 2 inches long, and it's the whole thing. And I would take a bite of the, well, one of the chestnuts, a couple of the peanuts, one of the mushrooms, a nice piece of chicken. The chicken was covered with little red dots of pepper anyway, and a pepper on it, a full pepper that was covered by the mushroom and the chestnut, which I ate. And that's something, folks, you bite into that, you know you're alive. You know you've done something. And I did that. I bit into it. I had all the peppers in there. And most people throw them out. I ate them. I thought, well, I can do this. Remember now, I haven't slept. I've taken a killer workout. I have a deep, bad cold. And I'm going to go do a podcast now and yak for a while. And I've had, with no breakfast, nothing good to eat. I've had Kung Pao chicken. I think Kung Pao are a Chinese word that means only suburban people will order this. And you know something? I ate the whole thing. In the car coming over here, I had sweated again through my clothes just from the peppers and from the Kung Pao chicken. And so you know what? I got here. This is Adam Carolla's studio. You have Adam Carolla here and all the people waiting, all the guys working on cars, all the guys working on putting a new studio together, all the guys working on making things right, but they're very smart. They can change anything. They can fix anything. They can take anything apart and put it back together again. And they're tough guys. And I walked in and all of them turned around and said, "What is that smell?" And I said, "Oh, it's not worth telling about." And Adam and all the guys just said, "You look terrible. Do you have a cold or something?" And I just said, and they said, "Why are you sweating so much?" And I said, "Never mind, I'll tell you later. Maybe I could just sneak out of here without telling anyone." But that was the story of my lunch. And you know what? Like everything else in life, I wouldn't change a thing in it. It's more fun to go through it and then have a chance to tell you. It's more fun to know that Shakespeare is Shakespeare, Homer is Homer, and Pluto is a planet. So remember, as always, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that is still the truest thing I know. Be well, and we'll see you here next week. Remember, LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you then. Ha 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 ha.